council, please approach. Good morning to each of you. Mr. Buchanan, good morning to you. You may approach the podium and you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please this court, Chief Justice, opposing counsel, our clerk, and our guests. My name is James Buchanan, and I have the great distinction of representing the interests of Mr. Tracy J. Norris.
Mr. Buchanan, I think we maybe need to work on your microphone just a second. There you go.
Better?
Better. Thank you so much.
Okay. Let's go back up 1 second. My name is James Buchanan. I have the great distinction of representing the interest of Mr. Tracy J. Norris, who is here with us today from the state of Colorado. Our argument rests on one of the most fundamental issues in our court system, jurisdiction, the very power of a court to hear an action. Jurisdiction is so fundamental that it repeatedly has been held to be an issue that can be raised at any time during a proceeding. It is something that a party cannot confer upon the court by acquiescence or consent. It cannot be created by waiver, estoppel, or even conduct of the parties. It's so instrumental that any action taken by a court without jurisdiction is considered void. In fact, this court, like any other appellate court, has the duty to settle jurisdictional issues before any legal issue can be addressed. Standing relates to jurisdiction. The ability of a party to bring their grievances before the court. It, too, has been the subject of review hundreds of times at any point in a proceeding. That is, in our opinion, till this case. The benefit of those observing, brief history. Mr. Norris is the father of three young children. Several years ago, he was married to the children's mother, Katie Norris, where they resided in the state of Colorado. One day, she elected to pack up the children and come to Nebraska and live with the appellees, the Hydens. What's noteworthy is that Katie also lived with the Hydens for part of her childhood, but they are not her biological nor adoptive parents. Now, during her time in Nebraska, Katie had no job, had no property. She filed for divorce against Mr. Norris, and nearly 3 years passed before that divorce was finalized. During that entire process, Mr. Norris traveled back and forth from Colorado to Nebraska. When the divorce was finalized, the children and their mother went back to Colorado. Unfortunately, 49 days after the decree was entered, Katie died of acute alcohol poisoning while in Colorado. It was at that moment that Mr. Norris became the sole custodial parent of those children. Less than 5 months later, the Hydens filed for grandparent visitation with the minor children. A default judgment was entered against Mr. Norris, granting grandparent visitation in January of 2017. Mr. Norris then immediately filed several motions, including two motions to vacate, as well as a motion to dismiss. Those motions were ultimately denied and the appeal was filed. Until this appeal was filed, Mr. Norris represented himself pro se. He had no representation. Mr. Norris is and was during this entire action a resident of the state of Colorado. He filed his motions from Colorado, drove from Colorado, and came before the court on several occasions to try to have his grievances addressed. He attempted to fight the default judgment entered against him by filing a timely motion to vacate. The first time that it was heard, it was argued under the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act. Now, what's interesting is that at that juncture, the district court took the opportunity to fully hear the evidence and took the matter under advisement to determine if it had jurisdiction under the UCCJA. On May 2, 2017, the court ruled that it did have jurisdiction and denied the motion to vacate. 6 days later, on May 8, Mr. Norris filed another motion to vacate, and has specifically pled the issue of standing, that the Hydens did not meet the definition of grandparent under 43-1801. It was perfectly laid out in his pleadings as well. Again, this occurred after the May 2nd order that was entered by the district court. Now, what's notable about the pleadings themselves is that the Hydens failed to notify the court that they are not the biological or adoptive parents of Katie Norris. The evidence that they submitted at the default judgment also failed to note that very specific fact. Now, when a litigant files a motion to vacate, the court typically considers the right of that litigant to defend the action on the merits against judicial efficiency. It's been the history of this court to favor a defendant to present a defense to the court. A finding or a ruling that's floated around in many decisions has been, quote, a meritorious defense is one which is worthy of judicial inquiry because it raises a question of law deserving investigation and discussion. We ask, what is more meritorious than standing? Mr. Norris asked the court to vacate its default judgment and address the appellee's standing to bring the entire action. However, the court in its final order in June of 2017 states, the court denies the defendant's motion on the issue of standing, as the court previously ruled in its May 2nd order that it had jurisdiction and the lack of standing issue was an argument the defendant was well aware of prior to the hearing on January 5th, 2017. In essence, we believe the court state that he waived that argument. He already had... about those words as the context requires. That actually is getting to our point of we haven't gotten there yet. That has actually never been determined by any court. However, I want to point out that there was a recent Court of Appeals ruling in March of this year that addressed grandparent visitation, and it stated that even if granted temporarily, it affects a substantial right of a parent to raise their children, and as such, the district court should make very specific findings in accord with 43.18.02 subsection 2. That did not happen here. So our position is we do not know if they have met the definition of as the context requires. We don't know. Again, as stated, we have found no precedent, no legislative history, no indication whatsoever as to what that language, those five words mean. Go ahead, sir.
Is it a factual question or a legal question?
I believe both in a way, because, of course, the court would have to look at circumstances. One other segment of grandparent visitation is whether or not there existed a pre-existing relationship that was beneficial to the children. That is a question of fact. The question of law still goes back to whether or not that grandparent meets a particular requirement to satisfy having the standing, as in they have that linear relationship with the child.
Is it your view of the law or under this statute that to be a grandparent under the statute you can only qualify as a biological grandparent or an adoptive parent and there are no others?
We are not making that stand because we've not had the opportunity to present that very particular argument at the district court level.
But I'm not asking as a question of evidence. I'm asking you your view of 1801.
Our view of 1801 is when you look at the previous U.S. Supreme Court under Troxell versus Granville as well as Hammett versus Hammett, there is no direction as to those five words. However, in Troxell versus Granville, it specifically stated, that was for reference, that was a Washington statute that said any party that had a pre-existing relationship may petition for visitation with the child. I am paraphrasing. That is what we've been trying to determine as well, Your Honor, is, again, as stated to Justice Castle, we believe there may be a degree of both. Statutory language is to be given its plain, ordinary meaning as it reads. However, there is those five words prefixed to that definition of unless the context otherwise requires, which may lead us to, and force us to go into a factual determination. We simply don't know.
Do you think there is space in that phrase, the phrase unless the context otherwise requires? Do you think there's space in that phrase for the doctrine of in loco parentis?
The problem with in loco parentis is that it relates to a parental role. It is not in loco grandparentis. I understand, and I've heard some recent arguments related to, if somebody has standing under the guise of in loco parentis, they have the ability to request visitation with the child. But in loco parentis, there's no other finding I can find that would grant a grandparent that same kind of right to pull in loco parentis in to use that as standing.
Is your proposition grandparents can never serve in loco parentis?
No, that is not our stance either. Where we're at in this particular case is we feel that there's actually an abuse of discretion that has occurred, wherein Mr. Norris properly files his motion to vacate, and then when he's denied that, he's at the hearing, he's told, I'm going to let you do this, but we're not having a trial today, and then I'm going to decline your motion because you were well aware of this before. What happened was the order elected to failed to act, to grant him his relief, which resulted in an unfair deprivation of a substantial right. And it's been held before that a substantial right is something that can be brought before the court even under a temporary order. As stated in I'm going to quote the case, Sim versus Friel, 25 Nebraska, Court of Appeals 640 from March 18th of this year, it was found that grandparent visitation does affect a substantial right, and as such, there needs to be very specific findings before any is granted.
Were those comments made with respect to appellate jurisdiction?
No, they were not. I'm out of time, just would like to finally say thank you for having the opportunity to present this argument. We certainly appreciate it.
Before you sit down, I want to be clear. You started out arguing jurisdiction and standing. That argument is premised. The linchpin of it is those words, unless the context otherwise requires, because but for that, they clearly would not be within the definition.
My best response to that, Justice, is yes and no, because the biggest problem is he was never given the opportunity to address that as the context requires definition. He was precluded from doing so, and we felt that that was that unless the court, because if it ultimately determined that they do not have standing, the entire action is void for lack of jurisdiction. We felt that the jurisdictional component of standing needed to be addressed very specifically before it proceeded any further.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Grafton, good morning to you.
May it please the court, justices, opposing counsel, audience, my name is Scott Grafton. I represent the appellees, Frederick Hayden and Ann Hayden, in this matter. As the court knows, from the review of the record, a complaint for grandparents or visitation was filed in this matter. It was properly served upon the appellant. A motion for temporaries was also filed with the court. A hearing was held on that. The court entered a temporary order denying that. That's the exact same issue that came up in Sims and has been cited by the Nebraska Court of Appeals in March of this year, and provided further clarification going forward on that particular issue. When I hear counsel repeat to this court time and time again that Mr. Hayden did not have the opportunity to do this or the opportunity to do that, he was served with a copy of a complaint. He was served within the proper time of the summons. He was provided with a motion for default judgment. He was provided with a notice of hearing, and he chose not to participate in the proceedings. On the standing issue, he could, but it's important to note that on his first motion to vacate, he argued under the subject matter jurisdiction, home state issues. And then it wasn't until May of 2017 that he raises the standing issue for the first time. And that was after the court authored a lengthy opinion of its analysis as to which state would have jurisdiction over these children. I think in Exhibits 1 and 2, which are part of the record, the standing issue is covered, and as counsel indicated, this matter was in litigation with this district court judge for 2.5 years. She was well aware of what the issues were at the time that the default judgment was entered. The affidavits, Exhibits 1 and 2, also set forth, and again, it comes back to that unless the context requires otherwise. And in our opinion, and obviously in the district court judge's opinion, unless the context otherwise requires, comes down to a factual determination that was covered in Exhibits 1 and 2.
So your view of 1801 is that unless the context otherwise requires refers to a factual determination, not referring to other portions of the statute?
I believe it relates to a factual determination, and that was my understanding when we researched this prior to filing the complaint, because there was very little guidance on that issue. But for grandparents, correct. Correct, but grandparents, their whole argument before this court today is that my clients are not biologically related to the mother of these children, nor did they adopt the mother of these children. So that is correct. And that's not in dispute. And that's the way we put it in the complaint. That's the way the grandparent visitation order was entered, as the context requires. It never says that they are the biological grandparents of these children, nor that they adopted the mother of these children. If you look at the complaint, if you look at the order that was entered after our hearing on January 5th of 2017, it clearly says they are the grandparents as the context requires.
Did anyone consider the possibility that that phrase, unless the context otherwise requires, simply means when you're reading the rest of the statute, if grandparent is used in a phrase that would require someone beyond a biological or adoptive relationship, that it, the statute is contemplating that, but it's not contemplating looking at the facts within the scope of this definition. Did anyone ever consider that?
I obviously considered that, and that's why we put it in our complaint that way, and that's why the order that obviously was prepared has that as the context requires. I would just point you to sentence one of the very first statute of the grandparent visitation statutes, of which there's only three, which is very small. Anytime it mentions grandparent, as that definition is set forth in 43-1801, grandparent means A and B unless the context otherwise requires. And therefore, in 1802 and 1803, when grandparent is mentioned or listed, it refers back to the definition in 43-1801, which allows the court to consider the context of that definition. The three statutes for grandparent visitation are very short and don't give a lot of guidance. So when I...
Are they vague or uncertain?
Not to me, they are not. When we're talking about grandparents, I take that to mean when the legislature puts the context language in sentence one of the very first grandparent visitation statute, that the court, the trial court, is a prior fact can determine what the context requires.
Is that boilerplate language unless the context otherwise requires? Do we see the legislature use language like that in most of its definitional statutes?
That I couldn't tell you. I would say that's not something that I typically see.
Is it possible that it leaves nothing in the context of this statute?
I don't believe so. Obviously, you read statutes and you give them the plain meaning, and when it requires under the definition of grandparent for the court to consider the context, the court should consider the context, which the court did in this case, using the verified complaint as well as Exhibits 1 and 2 that were offered at the hearing on January 5th of 2017.
Counsel, did this court speak to this issue perhaps in Hammett to some degree? I mean, weren't they comparing this statute to the Washington statute as it relates to its constitutionality and looking specifically at 1802 and the definition of 1802 and grandparent, and talked about there being a bloodline or adopted line as it relates to 1802 specifically? Wasn't that in there?
In the statute for, in the Washington case or in the Nebraska statute?
In Hammett.
Hammett, okay.
When this court was interpreting 1802 specifically, did they not speak to 1802 and the definition of grandparent with respect to who is a grandparent in comparing it to the Washington statute and specifically saying why ours is much more narrow than theirs?
The answer is yes. They did address that. However, I think the issues in Hammond were much different than the issues in our particular case. Number one, the party in that case participated in the proceedings, and as Justice Pavick pointed out, you can obviously raise subject matter jurisdiction at any point in the proceedings. But in this particular case, the issues were addressed. The facts, to my recollection, as to whether or not the Hydens had adopted or were the biological parent of the natural mother of these children was not in dispute. So then it goes right down to the context, which is, again, line one of the first statute pertaining to grandparent visitation.
And by that, you mean the factual context?
Correct. And that was based on the evidence presented before the court.
Is 1803 relevant to this discussion?
As it pertains to 1803, I think there's, if we're talking about the jurisdictional issue, obviously the court made those findings in its order, I believe, of May 2nd, 2017, as to 42-1803, as to the jurisdictional issues that were before the court. The court's opinion on the grandparent visitation statute, as well as the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act, were, I thought, very well considered. A lengthy opinion was written by the district court judge, and obviously we agree with the findings and the opinions of that order. I would say they would look at a lot of the same factors that you would look at in in loco parentis relationship, as far as in this particular case, the minor children resided with my clients for 3 years prior to the death of the natural mother of these children. Prior to that, my clients were at the birth of each of the children that are involved in this case. My clients had significant beneficial contacts with all of the minor children in this case. And the district court was completely aware of all of those facts when it ruled that, as the context required, the Hydens are the grandparents of these three minor children involved in this case.
Is the record here sufficient for the trial court to be any sort of factual finding with respect to the in loco parentis status?
Yes. Exhibits 1 and 2 of the bill of exceptions would provide the court with the factual basis, as well as the verified complaint that was uncontested as of January 5, 2017, when the default judgment was heard and entered.
Can this court look at legislative history to try and determine what these statutes mean?
Can you?
Yes.
I would assume so, Your Honor. Looks like I'm out of time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? No, there is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case of the day.